AFA Action takes attacks on the family seriously. The enemies of the family constantly employ new tactics to try to sneak past our radar. They know if we stand together, their evil plans will fail. Your gift to AFA Action allows us to stay vigilant against their onslaught. And if you give this month, you'll receive access to the Cultural Institute video, When Your Faith is Illegal, by Frank Harbor on AFA Stream as our thanks. You can make your gift today at afaaction.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Monday, September the 30th, 2024. Joining me in studio is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Chris Woodward.
Good morning, Chris.
Well, the hurricane that hit the Florida shores and then went on up into the southeastern part of the country, namely Georgia, Tennessee, North Carolina, was just, it's one of the top stories of the year because the devastation that has been, that has taken place. If you didn't experience it, sometimes it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. But for the folks who did experience in those regions, many parts of those states I just mentioned, it's life altering for a lot of people. And so we wanted to talk about that with 8 Days of Hope President Steve Tiber. 8 Days of Hope obviously is doing a lot of work in that part of the country, as they do always when we have natural disasters. Steve, good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are y'all doing?
Good, Steve. 8 Days of Hope, obviously, you guys are going to be deploying, immediately? Already there?
You know, we were, this is our third day of feeding people in Perry, Florida. We actually, as soon as the storm passed through, we started headed down that way with thousands and thousands of mules with our mass feeding arms. So, again, working with the local church, I think already 4,000 families have been fed. Some have met Jesus for the first time waiting in line for food, and our volunteers have been working nonstop. So we're going to continue to serve those in need without power in the Perry, Florida area. But yesterday we announced we are deploying our rapid response team to Valdosta, Georgia. And they, our volunteers, our leaders are there right now. We have millions of dollars of equipment there, and the volunteers will start showing up later tonight and tomorrow. We'll be there for at least two and a half weeks, probably longer. And while we're serving there, we are right now looking at Asheville, North Carolina. So by the end of the week, it could be three different states. And to your point, Tim, the depthness of the storm has been really challenging for ministries like 8 Days of Hope.
Well, yeah, I mean, the swath of the storm was unlike anything I can quite remember in terms of its impact. Hurricanes, you know, are devastating, especially a Category 4 like this one, but usually it's been more or less within a 50-mile radius of the beach, and then inland it gets flooding and rain about a 100-mile radius maybe, but we're talking about hundreds of miles impacted by this.
Yeah.
Asheville, North Carolina, it's like underwater right now, isn't it?
It really is. You know, we have 271 volunteer leaders, and about 8 of them live in North Carolina. And again, we're working fervently. As soon as we can get a team in there safely to develop a plan to serve those in need. But you're right. This storm is unlike any other storm we've worked on over the last 19 years. I mean, we've done some big ones, Katrina and Harvey, but we've never seen a storm go so far inland. And the flooding, Tim, the flooding in some of these states, you know, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Alabama, even, it's been eye-opening.
I saw where a report, guys, was that, and Chris, you can comment on this if you want to. And then Steve, I wanted you to give your information. People can contact you if they want to make a donation or they want to go and physically help with you guys. But I saw a report where it said the Atlanta metro area received 11 inches of rain in a 48-hour period. Okay. Georgia, I'm guessing, is much like Alabama and Mississippi because, you know, get the Gulf moisture during the year, and, and you get a lot of rain. You get 50, 58, 60 inches of rain annually on average. And you're talking about 1/5 of that in less than 2 days. So the deluge, you just can't imagine unless you experience it what that is. Go ahead.
Yeah. Governments, cities are not built for that amount of rainfall in that quick of time. If you've ever been out west where they have flash flooding, it's because it is so dry out there. If you get a huge downpour, that's why all of a sudden it starts to build up, because it's not used to getting something of that sort. That's why, like, I lived in Birmingham, and there are parts of Birmingham that if you get just a huge downpour, they're just 5 points south where that shooting was recently. Areas like that, just that are not used to it and not built to take that amount of water that quickly, they tend to flood. And then all of a sudden you have major problems.
Sure. You know, Steve, one of the things, of course, everyone's been transfixed on this storm and its aftermath. I know around our house we've been watching and, of course, praying, you know, for the desperation of these people. But there are entire communities, a couple of communities completely wiped out off the map, so to speak. And there are entire communities that are cut off from the outside world because the lone bridge that goes into their community is gone, swept away. So, I mean, this makes things very difficult even for groups like 8 Days of Hope to get in.
Well, great point. Many roads have washed away, especially when you get to rural parts of North Carolina. You know, we always want to be there the day after the storm passes with generators and laundry trailers, feeding trailers and bobcats. Of course, we got to make sure our volunteers are safe as well. I'm thankful that we were able to get to Florida the next morning. I know that today and tomorrow we're preparing 6,000 meals to take up, we think, to North Carolina here in the next 48 hours. There's no quick fix here. You know, think about the flooding that happens to somebody's home and just the devastation that family goes through. But it just doesn't stop at their home. It's their church. It's the playgrounds that they grew up on. It's their school. It's their business. I mean, so lives are turned upside down. But this is where God is calling his people to be a glimpse of hope, because our God is not a hopeless God. And so yesterday, a truck driver that came by, loved the T-shirt, wanted a T-shirt. One of our volunteers led him to the Lord. He was so curious about why we do what we do. And I'm just thankful that we're able to serve these families in need. And without American Family Radio and our support, guys, you know this stat, 85% of the 60,000 volunteers that travel with us listen to American Family Radio. So even though today you might be in Mississippi and I'm in another state, know that you're making a big difference by getting the word out.
Yeah. All right, Steve, if people listening, they want to make a donation, or they want to sign up, you know, for information. As you say, many of our listeners are very familiar. Most all of our listeners are very familiar with 8 Days of Hope, but they maybe folks listening want to know, how can I help? What can I do? What would you say to those folks?
Yeah, it all starts at the website, 8daysofhope.com. We're accepting volunteers right now for Valdosta, Georgia. We're going to be there for about 2.5 weeks. It's free. We provide food and lodging. We have some spots if you have an RV. You do need to be 16. Any skill set is needed. So 8daysofhope.com to volunteer, to donate. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as well. And again, as we develop plans to go to North Carolina, we'll keep you guys in the loop.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Okay. God bless you. Have a good day.
You too. It's our brother Steve Tiber, who's the president of 8 Days of Hope.
Chris, I know we have some other news regarding this storm, but I'm with you guys. The thing that kind of surprised me about this is how far inland. I mean, this came across, I guess, what they call the Big Bend part of Florida, and just kept going. And for a hurricane to reach all the way to North Carolina with that kind of, you know, wind power and that amount of rain is just extraordinary. And like some folks have been saying, once in a century kind of disaster.
Well, and the power outages.
Yeah.
Now, the millions of people without power, imagine that, being without power for, you know, it'll probably be weeks.
Weeks
before the...
And because we've all been reading about first responders, whether they be firemen or what have you, trying to rescue people. Some people stranded on their...
Did you see in Tennessee? Somewhere in Tennessee, they had a hospital. People in
the hospital.
They were on the roof
that quickly. They couldn't get out.
Patients were on the roof.
Yep.
That was where was that? Somewhere in Tennessee, middle or east Tennessee. I'm not sure where, but
it was Unicoi County Hospital in Tennessee.
The flooding was so bad they had 50 patients on top of the building,
and so quick flooding happened so quickly. Yeah. There was nowhere to go but up. They could
Unicoi County Hospital is in Irwin,
is
Tennessee, which according to Google is. I'm backing out of it here.
It's okay.
It's east of Knoxville, near the state line.
East of Knoxville. Okay.
East of Knoxville, north of Asheville, like right on the line.
I got
much.
You. Also, we have 5 radio stations off the air because of the power.
And yes. That's
not that's trivial compared to people's personal losses and everything, but we are off the air in Valdosta. That's where Steve said they're going.
Yes.
8 days of Valdosta, Waycross, Dublin, those are all in South Georgia, and Princeton, West Virginia, and Hickory, North Carolina, all off the 5 stations off the air because of the power outages. And I saw some trucks headed that way yesterday, you know.
Yeah.
You know, what's great about America is one of the things that's great about America, how people pitch in and help our fellow Americans in time of need, because I know that, you know, you're going to see trucks. I'm talking about, what do you call them?
Like just from
electric company trucks, whatever you call those things.
Utility trucks.
You know, they'll be coming from Missouri and Arkansas.
Michigan,
all over to go to, and the coordination that takes.
Right.
For these electric companies to send trucks from other parts of the country that weren't affected to North Carolina, to Georgia, to Florida.
And the people just in our own communities, not just here where our flagship station is, but the folks who are listening, we've all experienced this during bad storms. We're all hunkered down in our homes, you know, hoping the power comes back on.
Right.
And these folks in the utility, the power company folks, are out there in the middle of the storm, putting lines back up. It's really is extraordinary, and they don't get enough credit. I'm sure they don't get paid enough, but these are dedicated people who are serving everyone else while we're staying dry.
I know a guy here in the area that is involved with the internet service at the local utility here that powers much of this part of Mississippi. And you kind of think, well, it's just the internet. People don't need that. But with a lot of people working from home or trying to communicate now, that's just as important as electricity.
Well, and also I saw continually in reading the stories over the weekend and then on Facebook, people saying, hey, if there's anybody in this area who still has internet, here's where my grandmother lives. Here's where my sister lives. If it's possible, can you check? We can't get in touch with them because a lot of these places, cell towers weren't working. So it's like you said, Tim, people pitching in and trying to help each other. But the internet can be important, even though we sometimes think of it on a daily basis as just being part of our entertainment or what have you. Sometimes it's a lifeline of communication.
Yeah. We have somebody that's part of our news team that works remotely and he zooms in every day, or we have to call him when Zoom's not working. If we didn't have that communication, we'd have no way to work with him.
You know, Asheville, North Carolina, which is getting a lot of attention because they had the North Carolina National Guard had to rescue 41 people. This has been reported by rescue them. Mm-hmm. 41 people. That's also where Billy Graham's we've been there many times.
Yes.
Four, five, six times, I think, I've been there. Asheville, North Carolina.
Because they have retreats in that area.
Yeah, but what happens in these, and I'm no expert on this, but you mentioned the terrain. What happens in these mountainous areas is, as you can expect, if you get a torrential flood, like, I don't know, 10 inches of rain, all that rain's washing down into the valley.
Yes.
Huh?
Where most towns are located. You don't build a town
on
usually
top of
on the
mountain.
Side of a mountain.
Right.
It's in the valley.
In the valley, so you get that kind of, it's just going to be, and they were saying, you know, people, they can't get roads into there.
Right.
Can't get many emergency vehicles in because the roads are
blocked. Yep. So right now we're looking at more than 100 dead, but as Governor Cooper of North Carolina said over the weekend, the death toll is probably going to rise.
Well, there's a lot of people missing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 30 people killed just in the county that Asheville is in. That's going to that's going to increase by a lot in the next few days.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We encourage you to go to the 8 Days of Hope website to find out what they're doing and what you can do to to help. All right, next story, Chris.
There's a potential strike that's going to be starting at midnight tonight. A strike by workers at ports from Texas to Maine will reportedly hammer U.S. farmers and other Americans already dealing with an economic downward spiral. Apparently, unionized dock workers in the International Longshoremen's Association, which represents about 45,000 members at East Coast and Gulf Coast ports, may go on strike tomorrow if they don't reach an agreement by the end of today or midnight. Now, the two sides to the labor dispute have been at an impasse over issues including wages and automation at ports. Here's what you need to know, America. If these people go on strike and they remain on strike for a long period of time, that is supposed to cost our economy $5 billion a day. Billion with a B. Our economy is already hurting. This could only make it worse. And then you don't get stuff in stores.
Okay, so layman here, don't understand how all this works, just how the chain of effect. Mm-hmm. So you're saying longshoremen, I know what they are, they're the workers that work in the ports, mm-hmm. right, that load and unload cargo, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's extremely important to our country. Are you saying these people are unionized?
Yes,
they are.
Okay, they're unionized. I knew that already. People want to know. You don't know that? Yeah, I know that already, but I'm asking for a friend.
Okay.
They're unionized, and they are threatening to go on a national strike?
Yes, from Texas all the way up through Maine.
On the East Coast or the West Coast both?
No, I think it's just the Gulf Coast all the way up the East Coast.
Okay, and do you know what their grievance is?
They want more pay and better benefits.
And there's also concern about automation. And going forward, of course, this is going to be a problem in a lot of occupations, especially those that require human beings to use their bodies to carry, to lift, what have you. The more companies move to automation, well, just like the auto workers and the auto companies went to lines for making the cars and automated a lot of those lines. I'm sure there are concerns by these dock workers that they're going to be pushed out of their own occupation by automation.
Right. Now, asked about this over the weekend, he was standing on the tarmac. There's an aircraft going behind him. But President Biden was asked by a reporter whether or not he's going to seek to intervene here. Clip 3.
Mr. President, would you intervene in the dock workers' strike if they go on strike on Tuesday?
No.
Why not?
Because it's collective bargaining. I don't believe in Taft Hartley.
Now, just to go over what he said there, the reporter asked him, are you going to seek to intervene on this port worker strike situation? He said no. When she asked him why, he said basically it has to do with Taft-Hartley, and I don't agree with that. The Taft-Hartley Act is—
You don't agree with it, or he doesn't agree with it?
Biden doesn't agree with it.
He said it's collective bargaining.
Correct. The Taft-Hartley Act is something from like decades ago that basically—
I'm very familiar with it.
Yeah, it paved the way for right-to-work laws.
I mean, I can break it down, but I mean, but I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah. The Taft-Hartley Act, the reason Biden doesn't like that is because Biden is 110% union. He doesn't like anything that's anti-union, and right to work means you don't have to pay dues or fees as a condition of employment. Therefore, he's opposed to it, and he doesn't want to get involved here. But as you guys remember, I think I was alive, but I was a baby. You had the air traffic control situation with Reagan back in the 80s.
Yes.
Where there was a labor dispute, and Reagan he didn't have a problem getting involved there. So,
well, no, he fired them all.
But those were federal workers.
They were federal workers. In this case, there is precedent for presidents getting involved in trying to facilitate and help negotiations between union workers, especially a big union like this one, and their employers, the companies that employ these folks. So, while I agree with him, that is Biden right there, at least initially it's best for the government to stay out of it and let these folks negotiate their own agreement, you know, going forward, contract. I guess their contract's about to run out. I'm not sure what the problem is exactly, but let them sort it out. Now, there are times, as I say, when you have strikes that affect the country so severely that an administration, a president, not necessarily him personally, but sometimes that I think that's happened, would get involved because it's in the best interest of the national. It's in the best national interest for them to get.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about just in terms of what Chris was saying, stores in Texas and east of the Mississippi, which all depend heavily on products coming into the U.S. through ports, and the dock workers, because they're unionized, the only ones who can handle these products. You could have a situation where very quickly store shelves would be emptied. And then where do people go for food? So in a case like that, the government may have to. Listen, if this goes on for a week or 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you're going to have people screaming bloody.
But murder. I don't think the government can impose it.
I don't know.
I don't think the federal government can compel non-government employees to agree to something. I think what they can do is, I think this happened with the United Auto Workers or something during Obama's, seemed like that, maybe it was Bush, but they got involved. They said, hey, I'm talking about the administration. They got involved directly to sort of facilitate, to help both, yeah, as a mediator sort of a situation. But
yeah, anyway. I don't know. I mean, do you bring in National Guard troops to, but some of these come in on these big containers. Mm-hmm. You don't just get eight guys and just, okay, everyone lift on three. I mean, there are cranes that lift these big containers from ship to shore and, load them on trucks so they can take off and deliver their products. So this is not just something you can solve with manpower.
But you're right, though. If you have that completely shut down for a week or two, I mean, the
stores will run out of their inventory.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And then there's nothing.
Yeah.
There was a guy interviewed on Fox. I don't have this audio, but he was an expert interviewed by Fox and Friends earlier today about this situation. And he seemed to think that produce would be something you would see affected quickly, whereas you might be able to find plenty canned goods and dry goods.
Are you talking about food being imported? Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of that food will spoil if it's not, I mean.
Yeah, if it's sitting on boats, ships.
Yeah, if it's not, like you say, canned. Yeah. But I don't, we're about to enter into something I know nothing about. That's
36 days
never stopped us before. You're right, but we do get a lot of food imported. People don't think about that. We get a lot of food from
avocados
around the world, but certainly Mexico and Central America and South America. We get
fruit.
We get a lot of
French fruit. Fries from France.
Think about that alone. You're talking about McDonald's not having French fries?
Yeah.
That could swing the vote.
Yes.
We are 36 days away from the election.
That could swing the vote for Trump or Harris,
I
think. Whichever one of them takes the wrong side of
the issue. Well, and I tell you this, we're kind of joking around now, but if this goes south fast, this could affect Harris, because it's going to be Biden-Harris, quote-unquote, doing nothing. Even though, to your point, I'm not sure what they can do. But when people don't have food, they want to blame somebody.
Yeah. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us. You're listening to Today's Issues on AFR.
If ending babies' lives in their mothers' wombs isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. And in a shocking stance, the Dems' VP nominee, Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you're pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help to defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano and Chris Woodward. Thanks for listening. Well, we're just a week or so away from the anniversary of October 7th in terms of Israel and what happened there with the slaughter of 1,100, I think it was, Israeli, some of them Americans, Israelis, and that'll be a day none of us ever forget, certainly Israelis. And we have a gentleman on the phone with us from Israel who was a helicopter paramedic on that day, Shafir Botner. Shafir joins us. Good morning, Shafir.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you for being on with us here on American Family Radio. I'm Tim. With Ed and Chris. You and I don't know each other. You were recommended to us by a mutual friend and to have you on to talk about what happened and what is happening in Israel. Would you please, first of all, you're talking to primarily an American listening audience here on our radio network. What would you say that Americans need to understand about what's happening in Israel right now, generally speaking?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me today with you. And for our American listener, if generally speaking about the situation right now in Israel, although it started a year ago at the south of Israel with the Gaza Strip, right now most of the focus, of course, still Gaza, but mainly right now the north of Israel. We have a quite intense atmosphere over there because of the attacks and missiles and sirens every day, attacks from Hezbollah side. And along with the Hezbollah attacks, we still have attacks from other countries like Yemen and Iraq. They're still sending missiles to Israel. So basically, every citizen of Israel, in every place, is still have the chance to hear a siren in the middle of the day or in the middle of the night and find very fast a safe place to be in. So although the situation is completely, thank God, differently in Gaza now, the citizens of Israel are still in a very tense days. And I guess you're all hearing the talking about further action that the IDF is going to take in order to take that threat away from the northern board. So I would say the new year of the Jewish calendar is coming in 2 days, but it's not going to be a happy one.
Hey,
And people are not going to celebrate.
Shafir, can you tell us a little bit about you are a helicopter paramedic on October 7th. Just give us your firsthand experiences of what you saw and experienced on that terrible, tragic day.
Yeah, it was Saturday morning, and it was my Saturday off. I was at home. I live in the south of Israel, a small suburban next to the capital of the south of Israel, Be'er Sheva. And I woke up, like most of the people of Israel, from sirens. And I know it sounds strange to people who don't live in Israel, but from time to time that's happening. I mean, out of nowhere, siren, and you're waking up or during the middle of the day. But it was a different atmosphere. Now I know that I could tell that because of the intensity and the numbers of the sirens that were simultaneously all over the country. And I realized something is happening. So as I'm doing always, I just put on my uniforms and went on my car. I called my colleague, the manager of the Negev, the South District. I didn't even need to ask him. He just yelled at me, Be'er Sheva or Ofakim, which is a small but became famous town in the south of Israel. Just arrived, be there as fast as you can. And I hit the road and I got to a junction when I need to choose, turn right to Ofakim or left to Be'er Sheva. And I don't know why. Honestly, I don't know why I choose left and to Be'er Sheva. And it turned out that I saved my life for the first time on Saturday, because if I was taking the second turn, making a right, just a few miles away, terrorists were already located over there waiting and targeting me with my car, which is like an ambulance with the sirens and with the lights. So I went to Be'er Sheva. I was in our Ben David Adom MDA, which is my EMS organization. That's the national organization in Israel, EMS organization, ambulance organization in Israel. I went to the station over there for a short time, and I got a call from my boss. He was telling me, please go as fast as you can to our south helipad, where the Magen David Adom helicopter service is located there. We have two helicopters of Magen David Adom, one in the south of Israel, and the other one is, the second one is the north. I guess you know it's a small country, so we don't need more than south and north. I got there very fast, and I got a call from the dispatch center telling me in less than 5 minutes, three severely injured soldiers are getting to you. And indeed, it was less than 5 minutes, and I got three severely injured soldiers. And to be honest, at that moment, at that time, I didn't realize the size of the event that we're facing with. I'm doing this job for many, many years, and from time to time, I treated soldiers or other people that got injured, even severely. That's my job. That's my nature of my job. And I had no clue what is about to come at that moment. So we took those three soldiers, me and my partner. That was an additional helicopter that joined this mission at that morning. So it was not a medical helicopter. It was a VIP helicopter with seats that they took all the seats out. And since then, I'm calling it Vietnam style. We just put the soldiers on the floor, the empty helicopter with my backpack with the medical equipment. And from that moment, me and my partner were on the helicopter for almost 72 years until, 72 hours until Monday evening, making rounds and of taking wounded soldiers, policemen, citizens from the south of Israel, from next to the Gaza Strip, from the Nova Party. I guess you heard about that party. And from the on the first time that we went on air, the dispatch of Magen David Adom told us, you can't go to the nearest hospital in Be'er Sheva, Soroka Hospital, because it's already closed. Too many injured people are over there. Take those soldiers to the center of Israel. So we flew from the south to the center of Israel. And from the air, it was morning, clear day. I'm just seeing a lot of places with smoke, everywhere smoke. And from far away, we could see the Gaza Strip and missiles are, you know, we saw the bright lights from Gaza to Israel. On the first few hours, we didn't know what is going on. We realized that we are facing something really big and bad, but we didn't know. Until, you know, we were landing in hospitals, helipads, and people were telling us Hamas is invading Israel, and many terrorists invaded Israel, actually inside cities, as you all saw, I guess, movies and short videos on TV. During those 3 days, we treated, I don't know, dozens of people, as I said, soldiers, citizens, policemen. Usually during our walk, we're in a position that we are giving strength and power and energy to people that need our help, sometimes families, relatives. And I must say, probably it sounds like a cliche, but we, at those days, we got power and energy from the soldiers and the policemen that we were treating. They gave us hope and power and hope that everything will be okay, because we thought, me personally, on Saturday morning until afternoon, I thought that we are going to lose our country. Honestly, I thought that this is the situation.
Yeah,
and that was very strange and different from, at least for me.
We're talking to Shafir Botner, and he is joining us from Israel. He was a helicopter paramedic on October 7th, which we're coming up on the anniversary of that, the Hamas attack on Israeli citizens, which was 1,100, I think, was the count of people that died that day, were basically murdered, butchered. It was awful, just horrific. And he had to see a lot of the aftermath of that and work during that, you know, immediate aftermath. Chris, did you have a question for Shafir before we let him go?
I did. It's my understanding there are still dozens of hostages being held in Gaza, for example, by terrorists there in Hamas. You mentioned hope a minute ago. Is there still hope that these hostages, which do include Americans, that they're still alive?
I would say definitely yes, because we don't have another choice. We must have hope and think about them all the time. That part of the, I wouldn't call it tradition, but part of being Jewish, the point or the part of saving life, that's what I'm doing every day, but part of the Jewish nation. We don't have other choice. We must believe, think, and do everything that we can to save those people, American, Israel, and other nations, by the way, that are still being kept in as hostages over there. And the answer is absolutely yes. And while speaking about the numbers just a few minutes ago, I have to mention that my organization, Magen David Adom, the national EMS, which is different from other, we can speak about that for in another conversation, but in another time. But we lost our men as well. I mean, we were a target at that day. We were a target for the Hamas terrorists, for the Hamas attack. They attacked ambulances and paramedics, medics, and I lost some of my walkers and some of my close friends, and even one person that I was grown to his legacy.
Yeah,
he is older, used to be older than my father. So I had to mention that.
And sure.
Before you let me go, if I may, although we are a national organization, the nature of our organization, which is saving lives and we are part of the World Red Cross movement. We are not a governmental organization, and we are not founded by the state and the Israeli state.
Yeah.
So we are funded by donations and the service that we are giving to the people. So if anyone from the listener wants to donate to Magen David Adom and to help, and I heard just the item before me speaking about our purpose in this world to make it better, you can donate and you can go to our website, savinglivesinisrael.org. And you can support Magen David Adom. And I must say that everything we're doing, even those days, is thanks to good people that are supporting us all over the globe, and especially from the U.S. So personally, I have to say thank you to all our listeners and all the American people.
Shafir Botner has been our guest. He is and was a helicopter paramedic on October 7th during the massacre committed by Hamas terrorists on Israeli civilians who were helpless. And this is a cold-blooded act of murder. Over 1,100 Israelis died. And Shafir, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. The website is savinglivesinisrael.org, folks, if you want to give to that organization to help them continue their work. Shafir, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for mentioning that kind of very important subject. Thank you, guys.
Yes, thank you, sir. And by the way, those of you who are listening, Shafir did mention that there are other nationalities represented in the remaining hostages. I think 64, at the beginning of September, 64 were still being held hostage and believed to be alive. And so there are 57 of those are Israelis, six are Thai nationals, and one is a Nepalese national. And there may be, I'm not sure what my count is there, maybe it's still an American or two. But anyway, these are individuals that are still being held hostage. So we want to thank Shafir Botner for being on with us. Chris, it's chilling to hear someone who has lived through that. And he did very well with his English. I must say, I'm always amazed that people in the Middle East and Europe who know multiple languages and can communicate. It's chilling to hear stories. He took a left instead of a right. If he had taken a right, he'd be dead.
Yeah. I mean, Americans, millions of Americans lived through 9/11. We saw it happen. We remember watching it on television, hearing all the things on the news or whatnot. But there's a difference between, like, we saw it on television and we lived through something like this. And, October 7th was kind of, sort of, Israel's 9/11. And the man we just spoke to and heard from is somebody that actually heard, that lived through it. I mean, I've heard stories from people that were supposed to be on that plane or one of the planes on 9/11, and they didn't make their plane or flight and whatnot. And
they were supposed to be in one of the buildings, but
right, exactly.
Had a doctor's appointment, those kind of things.
Exactly. And it hearing that man's story brings those kinds of things back into mind. And I can't say this enough. We've talked about it before on the show. When you read and hear and see things like we have discussed today, whether it's the hurricane, whether it's the port strike, whether it's the situation in Israel, which is still unfolding by the hour, we need to be praying about these situations and to be praying for people like that. I mean, that's not something you ever get over.
Right.
You just learn how to deal with.
Yeah.
You're listening to Today's Issues, excuse me, on American Family Radio. Next story, Chris.
All right. There is a debate tomorrow between the vice presidential candidates, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, the Democrat, and Vice President Kamala Harris's running mate. We'll square off with Ohio Senator and Donald Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance. This one's going to be on CBS. It starts at 8 o'clock Central. It will go a couple of hours. It's going to be moderated by at least two individuals.
2 hours? Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's going to be moderated by two individuals with CBS News, Margaret Brennan, who's one of their anchors, and she reports more often than she anchors. But then Nora O'Donnell from the CBS Evening News will be the other moderator.
And we are we have an event. I don't know if I guess we can tell folks we're screening. Yeah. It's the premiere for Culture Warrior, which is the film that honors the life and ministry of Don Wildman and the ongoing ministry of American Family Association. So we had this set up a long time ago before we knew about the. So we're gonna miss it. Tim and I will. We'll miss it, but you won't, right?
No. Oh, the newsroom will be covering the debate. Several of us are going to be watching, cutting audio. Robert Thornton, my brother from another mother in Christ, is going to be anchoring during the debate, and then I'll be helping providing him some cuts. I'll provide 11 billion things for you guys to run.
What did you say?
He's my coworker.
Oh. why didn't you just say that?
It was far more interesting the way he said it.
I tried to jazz it up a little bit.
My brother from another mother.
Yes.
Okay. In Christ.
Yes. We're all siblings. We're all children of God through faith in Jesus Christ. Therefore, Ed, you are my actual brother.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to be, what you're saying, you're going to be responsible for the news team for covering the.
Yes. Fred will be here.
So Wednesday we'll have coverage.
Where's the debate going to be? Not that it matters.
I should know
curious.
Right off the top of my head. It is in the United States of America.
Ah, good. Narrowing it down.
Where is debate? I should know. Where is debate?
Well, that's
sorry.
It's going to be a start for you right there, Chris.
Yes.
For your news coverage tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's the United States of America. New York City.
Huh? New York City.
Yeah.
New York City. Okay.
That was a 90s reference.
What are you? This debate, first of all, does anybody care about a vice presidential debate, Ed?
I would have, if I was not going to be attending this premiere, I would be watching it. Not necessarily happily, but I would just because it's part of what we do here in covering it. And I will watch clips of it afterwards and probably early the next morning. But I'm not sure this is going to move the needle any. Both of these are I don't mean this even in a disparaging manner. Both of them, both vice presidential candidates, are professional politicians. And they're both well-spoken. Tim Walz has been in politics for a long time, and J.D. Vance has not been in politics for a long time, but he is a U.S. senator. He has given lots of speeches. He's a pretty sharp guy. I think this is actually going to be a good debate, and I think it'll be substantive in terms of the issues covered. We are going to wait to see how the CBS moderators handle themselves. ABC got roundly criticized, at least by conservatives and those on the right, for their fact-checking in real time of President Trump, but doing none of the same with Kamala Harris. CNN's moderators, I think, were widely praised. I thought they did a great job.
Oh, yeah.
In the debate between President Biden and former President Trump. That was in June. So we wait to see how the CBS moderators handle this and whether they are as biased as the ABC moderators clearly were in the first and, I guess, only Trump-Harris debate.
Yes, I did. I mentioned this last week on the show, but I'll say it again and I'll share the link. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg is playing the role of Vance in the debate prep. And then Tom Emmer in the House is playing the role of Governor Walz in the debate prep for Vance.
Tim, what do you think? You think this is important politically, this debate tomorrow night?
Well, I would, you're asking my opinion.
I'm asking your opinion.
Opinion's what it's worth. I think probably you're going to have maybe half to 25% of what would watch of the audience that would watch a presidential debate.
Yeah.
So, but I think it will be interesting because a lot of probably sound clips will be carried.
Right.
People will watch. They won't watch the debate necessarily, but they'll watch the clips and the whatever goes viral if anything does.
Yeah.
From that, but I do think it will be a contrast in somebody who's pro. Capitalism versus somebody who's pro-socialism. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, he's an unashamed,
right?
Big government, tax them, regulate them, and grab the wealth and spread it around.
Yeah, he said that what some people call socialism, I just call being a good neighbor.
Yeah.
That's so, so
he's a big government guy, whereas J.D. Vance, the right. senator from Ohio, you know, he grew up, as he said, very poor.
Yeah.
And then he was successful in his education and successful in his business, mm-hmm. And his book and all those things. So he's very much pro, I would call it capitalism, pro.
Right. Free market.
So it'll be a big contrast from that perspective.
Yes. I do want to point out, too, and this has been the case for the last couple of debates. So CBS is hosting it, televising it, but a bunch of other networks are going to basically piggyback and air the same broadcast signal. So you can watch the CBS vice presidential debate on Fox News Channel, for example. It'll be on YouTube and other platforms.
What do you think, Ed? I'm going to get your opinion on this thing.
No, I tend to agree with you that the way this influences the election, I think, only happens if there's, for example, if Tim Walz comes out with some sort of absurd statement about confiscating guns, or some strong pitch for socialism and price controls. That's the kind of thing that will get played over and over again, and will feed into the distrust that a fairly sizable portion of the U.S. has for Kamala Harris. So it could affect her chances if he bungles it. Now, I think that's the way this becomes.
By the way, when we get back from the break, there is a tiny, slight trend toward Trump in the swing states.
Yes.
And that's happened in the last few days. So we will talk about that when we get back from this break. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.